which are skills that we really hadn't had any need for before that. And so all the great stories.
This is Ken Stringfellow of the Posies, Big Star, etc., and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Hi, everyone. It's Lily, the youth peer leader from Mental Health Association of Columbia Green County's Clubhouse. Are you a teen wanting to learn more about health education? Maybe you're looking to complete your volunteer hours or in need of a job. The weekly teen clinic on Wednesdays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Family Planning, located on the third floor of the county building on Main Street in Catskill, can help you answer any of your questions. Information can be found at greengovernment.com. Hope to see you there.
Name, Patty Boom. Host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? Every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at WGXC.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown. All kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
Underwriting is provided in part by Chronogram. Looking to stay informed about the latest in Hudson Valley dining, culture, and happenings? Chronogram's Eat, Play, Stay newsletter delivers curated updates on restaurants, bars, shops, local events, and more straight to your inbox. Covering food, culture, news, and real estate, it's designed to keep you in the loop 5 days a week. Discover what's new and noteworthy in the region by signing up at chronogram.com/newsletter.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Matthew of Phoenicia, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, January 29th. Local early morning temperatures range from 18 degrees in Medusa to 31 in Copaic. Regional average soil temperature is 33.5 degrees. Yes, it's time to squeeze every drop out of that if we can. Another weird day ahead. Some areas could still see snow squalls, even though it's rain predicted to start around 11 a.m., which will kick off a high temperature of 43 degrees. A change over to snow is expected to happen around 3 p.m. Winds will get gusty, and this is a recipe for bad travel. Basically blowing everything. Snow, rain, pedestrians. So plan some extra time into any afternoon travel, if you dare. Snow comes to an end around midnight, then we see a low of 16 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry with a high temperature of 32 degrees at 2 p.m. Overnight temperatures fall to 27 degrees, then Friday will be rainy all day with a mix in the morning and a high of 39 degrees noonish. Saturday will be dry with a high of 25 and a windy morning. Sunset today will be at 4:50 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:07 a.m. Looking way up, we see a big hole in the sun's coronosphere today, pouring out a thick plasma wind expected to cause G1 class magnetic disruptions on Saturday. X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 333 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently good above 10 megahertz with an S1 level noise floor. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 128. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meant to Ferment. This is a audition show on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM Wavefarm Radio. We're here in the Catskill studio, staying cozy. My name is Rebecca Echevarria, and I will be your host for this show. This show is going to explore all things fermentation. I will interview practitioners based here in the beautiful Hudson Valley, brewers, farmers, winemakers, artists, picklers, microbiologists, all that and in between. Today, I'm super grateful to have Darich Perez Reyes here with me. Darich is a prolific fermenter, artist, gardener, cook, and more who is based in the Hudson Valley. He was born in Trujillo Alto, Puerto Rico, and we will be discussing his practice and passion for ancestral fermentation, learn about fermentation in Puerto Rico, and dive deeper into a particular ferment he holds close to his heart called pique, which is a traditional hot sauce from the island. We met at one of his workshops in Kingston on fermented beverages, one of the many that he holds across the valley in New York City and Puerto Rico. In addition to consulting, developing fermented foods and drinks, making woodcuts of fermented foods and drinks also. Before we speak with Darich, we have a couple of songs for you by Puerto Rican musicians or those in the diaspora that intersect with fermentation. And underneath me, I have La Vida es un Sueño, which is by Miguel Zenón and Luis Perdomo from their album El Arte del Bolero. And I think it intersects with fermentation because it is kind of surreal. But soon we're going to phase out and go into a song called Café by Eddie Palmieri and Ismael Quintana from the album Echando Palante. And I would say coffee is one of the most well-known and widely enjoyed fermented foods from Puerto Rico. It's interesting with coffee because the fermentation takes place with the processing, and that really influences the flavor of the bean. Are you a big coffee drinker, Darich?
I am.
Yeah. I am also. So let's enjoy some café together.
Tostado y colado.
what I thought would happen. Okay, so next up we have Un Palito de Pitorro by Eduardo Villanueva Serrano from his album Sin Pitorro No Hay Parranda, which means without Pitorro there won't be a party. Pitorro is a cured version of cañita, or freshly distilled rum. It can be made, can be cured using fruits or nuts or spices. Common for celebrations on the island, I would say, though technically illegal. I had my first taste of Pitorro from a distillery in the Bronx called Port Morris, and I think it was really brought into the mainstream recently from Bad Bunny's song Pitorro e Coco from his new album. Do you like that song, Darij?
Definitely.
So unfortunately, we won't be enjoying that song right now, but we're going to go, yeah, we're going to hear Eduardo's homage to Pitorro. So enjoy.
Tan pronto llega septiembre, empiezo a escribir canciones, más las improvisaciones, ya pongo octubre y noviembre. Salgo a cantar en diciembre, salgo a cantar en diciembre, desde la montaña al morro, me distingo con el gorro, de jíbaro terminado, disfrutando un asopao y un palito de pitorro. Palito de pitorro. Mientras le doy un abrazo al vecino y la vecina, tienen allá en la cocina de Roncaño un calabazo. Por la ruta que me trazo, por la ruta que me trazo, parte del barrio recorro. Miguel y Doña Socorro me sirven en una dita, ñame brujo y carne frita, y un palito de pitorro, y un palito de pitorro. Cuando la noche está fría, como suele suceder, parrandear es un placer libre de monotonía. Dentro de la algarabía, dentro de la algarabía, a nadie cantando en zorro. En cambio, como un cotorro, Eduardito se la pasa pendiente al pastel de masa y a un palito de pitorro, y a un palito de pitorro. Al son del timbre doliente, vamos por muchos hogares, saboreando los manjares típicos de nuestro ambiente, compartiendo con mi gente, compartiendo con mi gente las penalidades borro. Muchos dicen venga el chorro, y yo me conformo con el rabito del lechón y un palito de pitorro. Palito de pitorro.
Okay, So we are here with Darich Perez Reyes, a fermenter based in the Hudson Valley. I mean, more than a fermenter, but involved in many different creative activities, a lot surrounding fermentation. And hi, Darich.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. How are you feeling?
Good, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you, how you doing?
Yeah, it's a crazy time. But I'm excited to have this moment.
Yeah, completely. It's important.
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to start off maybe with some of the basics for folks who aren't as familiar with fermentation. How would you define fermentation? Loaded question.
Yeah, I think the simple way of describing fermentation is the opportunity to collaborate with something invisible and transforming it and making it like more delicious.
Yeah. I mean, the flavor is huge.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been doing it for so long that it's like come natural, I think.
Yeah, I think to tap into that is an opportunity. I mean, now it can be hard, you know, finding the time or, I don't know. Yeah, just learning about traditional practices can get kind of lost in the internet of it all. But it can be really meaningful. I mean, communities around the world have been fermenting forever for so many reasons, like positive health benefits, preserving seasonal harvests, enhancing flavors. Have you noticed in your fermentation practice how it's been influenced by being here in the Hudson Valley?
Yeah, like when I came out to the state, I already have a introduction to fermentation. And I remember I traveled in my backpack with my kombucha SCOBY. And I brought this huge SCOBY to North Carolina where I started traveling there. And I realized when I get to, but in Puerto Rico, but that time, like, it wasn't any company of kombucha, and when I get to North Carolina, it was like 5 already.
Surrounding you when you arrive.
I thought that I was bringing something new. But yeah, like, I'm coming to the state, I realized that, it was a big community fermenting, and of course, come from so many years ago, like, that we'd be practicing this, but it was kind of a little trendy at that time by my eyes. Now it's more.
It's only growing.
It's keep growing. And
Yeah,
and it's part of fermentation, like the grow and you know, like bacteria keep growing, keep multiplying. And I think it's like the effect of it. And we can relate so much with them too.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it becomes a ritual. I think when I say we, everyone's different. We're all coming from different experiences. But I mean, at least for me, yeah, ritual, I didn't really grow up with that. Mm-hmm. And I think fermenting kind of reintroduced that in a powerful way because you have to. It demands that for a lot of ferments, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to keep checking up on them.
Yeah, it requires care and attention. And many, if you don't have that care sometime to ferment something and you forget about it, sometimes can go great, sometimes not that good. But I think it teaches us a lot about care, attention, observing what is happening. If where you are fermenting is like a glass jar that you can see through, I think that it can become fun.
Yeah.
And excited, and when you start to see bubble, and when you see that it's happening, like, of course, what you can see in a jar, but also it's more interesting what you don't see.
Yeah.
And those are our invisible friends, like playing and transforming this, like, food.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, because I think when, you know, around the time that we met, and I've gone to a couple of your workshops now and seeing you present at the Festival for Fermentation in Puerto Rico, like, senses is seems to be such a big part of your practice, like tuning into the senses of the sight or smell or touch, and developing that kind of intuition. Because for me, I think for some time, you know, even now I can put off checking a ferment because I don't, you know, I get kind of intimidated, or, oh, what's going on? Did I do something wrong? And I don't want to find out right now. But but if you could speak to, yeah, did you start that way, or having this just like sense memory that you were tuned into, or how did it develop through your practice? Was that something that you kind of kept building on?
Yeah, I learned through my grandma. Like, we have these almost like a hot sauce in Puerto Rico that is called pique. And one day I asked her, hey, like, you teach me how to make pique? And she said, yes, like, find this, find that. And I gather everything what I need, like, that we can enter in the in a specific ingredient, even the is completely variable by family, and it depends. But like, when like she teach me how to do it, like, we put everything in a recycle, like, alcohol, like rum bottle, put all the ingredient and put it out in the sun. And by the 9, already was bubbling, and it was not because my introduction no was through a scientific approach, was more as a tradition, like the tradition it sometimes is more loose about like checking.
The pH.
Exactly. Like,
or those who are unfamiliar, the amount of acidity that is, you know, when you get to a certain pH, you can, I'm putting this in quotation marks because they're safe. But there are, of course, food safety measures to be aware of, but there's also a lot of space for other, other practices.
And it becomes like notable safe by the eyes mostly the time. Like, if you notice something growing on top and you don't know what is growing on top, but that gives you already a notion of what is happening. But I think the my approach is being always more like sensorial, like how it look, how, you know, how it tastes. Let's open it and taste it. Like, it's mostly the time, like, recognizing that we have our own measurement. Like, our sense are tool to know. If it don't taste good, of course, don't eat it. No, because it's good for you.
Drink
and
the vinegar.
Exactly, no, like... You have to also respect like yourself and what those sense tell you.
Yeah.
It can get a little tricky because also many ferment It can be so strong in flavor that because we don't have that adapted palate, we can have the tendency of, oh, this tastes bad, even when can be completely safe to eat or drink. But at least, like, you know, other people also are doing it.
Yeah.
They are not dying. Like, you can try and get used to, you know.
Sure. I mean, it's commonly said, like, Sander Katz, who we were both extremely lucky enough to be part of his residency, another prolific fermenter. And a lot of other fermenters talk about the safety. It's one of the most safe methods of food preparation, because you're creating such a stable and environment for the microbes that, yeah, I think that's definitely to keep in mind for all those folks who might be a little wary, which I think that still happens, yeah. So it's understandable, something new.
Completely, yeah. And more when, yeah, like, mostly each ferment come from a different culture and they already have a palate developed to like that specific flavor.
Yeah.
I know many light ferment that I used to don't like and now I enjoy it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting that it gives you this opportunity to develop taste as you, just as a person getting, you can have new experiences of taste, new sensory experiences available
and
to you.
As we grow up too, like we are developing new like taste for things and it's also... Sometimes it's not your time to try something very funky. But you can
There's
start with something.
There's a time for blue cheese for everyone. Exactly. It will find you when you're ready for it.
Exactly. And it's an aquarian taste. Like that I'm happy to be completely open to try many things. And even if I don't like it, I give the opportunity to... At least touch my mouth.
Yeah. A slight, very subtle meeting of the senses. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned, us developing taste in our childhood. So when you were growing up, did you have, I mean, I think also I wanted to touch on the term that you've used in your workshops, ancestral fermentation, which I think ties back into your familial food traditions or as you were growing up. How did you discover that term? I had never heard it before. You had mentioned it in your workshops and I had been kind of longing for that connection to my own familial experiences and integrating that into my fermentation practice. So,
yeah, like it's... It's kind of a lot, but like I think the ancestral fermentation, when I bring that up, I use it as a reminder to each individual who participate and also a reminder to myself of this workshop. Like remember that we all come from somewhere. And lamentably, sometimes because we assimilate some other culture or we are like in some way, living in another place, like we sometimes forget about those tradition and those method of like preparing food and mostly when I bring it up is to use it as a reminder and also like remind, like when you remember that you come from somewhere, like we start to get equal, like as a group, as a community or, you know, as a country, a state, like whatever. But we start to understand that we are human and we come from somewhere and we all share like different technique or different like tradition of fermenting, and it's beautiful to see people in the workshop that I offer start to think about it and remember I remember my grandma used to do this and sometimes it's like an invitation to travel and get back to those ancestors that we all are holding in our body. They are with us, and we can kind of remember through them too.
Yeah.
But it's basically that.
No, I think that was, that was so beautiful. And yeah, I want to just call in anyone who's just joining. We're with Darich Perez Reyes, prolific fermenter in the Hudson Valley, talking about the call to remember and the invitation to discover our ancestral lineage that we have in us through this ancient practice of fermentation. And no, I will definitely be thinking of that as I am most probably fermenting. I mean, for the foreseeable future, but just that, yeah, that call to remember and that invitation is really beautiful. I was so excited, to see that mentioned. But now that we're saying a call to remember, and I mean, you're obviously traveling between New York and Puerto Rico, so Puerto Rico's not in the far history, but if you could just speak to a bit about possibly fermentation on the island, or do you have any memories of, I mean, you mentioned PK, which we could explore now or later, but just about fermentation on the island, I think it's so interesting. And, you know, there are some ferments that folks are super familiar with, like rum or coffee or chocolate, lesso, mari, and pique. And yeah, if you could just speak to like the conditions of fermenting there or anything you'd like to share just about Puerto Rican fermentation, I think could be nice to hear.
Thank you. Yeah. I think like pique is kind of one of the fermentation that we can, I say, quote unquote, embrace as our own.
Okay.
You know, but
hear that world. don't check the comments of the show.
And definitely, like, we have like mavi, that is a fermented beverage made with a bark of it's a butch tree. And we have like vinegars that as you have here displaying, the El Cocinero Puertorriqueño is the first book under the Spanish colony in Puerto Rico, and that book have like a few fermentation practice. The one of them is vinegar, and they are using, I think, the recipe called for using plantain, like yellow plantain, and using just the skin of the plantain to make plantain vinegar. And also, like, I cannot like mention fermentation in Puerto Rico without like talking about bread, because bread is a fermented food, and we also have our practice of making bread, and that is, I think, that bread is kind of one of those special ferment that unite almost every culture. And like, independently, you are making bread with like grains or more than grains, like wheat or rye, or like we have corn, you know, like it's many different of interpretation of bread. I think that is wonderful. But we have, we have like the sugar cane that definitely is like, you know, the
heavy hitter.
Yeah, and it's like the prime material of love to make a lot of type of alcohol, and and definitely that in the tropical, like in Puerto Rico, in the Caribbean, like ferment very quickly, and we have like guarapo, and the guarapo can ferment in just one day, and at least became like a, almost like a kombucha alcohol person. But it's so much, and still more, and I continually like keep researching because I find like wine made with pineapple. Like I saw the other day a friend posted something about these almost like flyers made back in the day in Puerto Rico where it was promoting a pineapple wine. And but that is not like popular knowledge, like a cultural thing to do, even though we practice that in a period of our history.
Yes. No, it's so interesting. I mean, I think the island, I'm reading a book, the name escapes me now, about the food history on the island and how it's evolved and what, I mean, last night I was reading a chapter about rice and how that kind of evolved, preferences change, options change.
Which book?
I can't remember the name of it now. I think On Eating, about Puerto Rican food history.
Yes,
Miguel Cruz.
Like in Spanish, I know the title in Spanish is called Puerto Rico en la Olla.
Okay.
And that is like a more academical book.
Yes.
But
yes.
I think it's the only person who academically write about the food in Puerto Rico and like take you through the history of many ingredients that we've been using.
Yes. Yeah, I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, it's really good.
But I think it's interesting what you mentioned about guarapo, that you can leave it outside for one day and it can start to transform, because those types of conditions are so different here in New York, just speaking to the power of the context, of the climate, of the humidity. Mm-hmm. And it is to see those things can influence the activity of the microbes and how fast they're able to proliferate and change the structure of the food. So I just, it is pretty amazing to ferment on the island compared to here, because you're on a different timeline, kind of.
Actually.
Yeah, I know. Take me back now. I know. But I would like to, because we're not near at the end, but I do want to call back to Pique, because that is one that I was hoping we could talk about. What is Pique?
I'm gonna share more like the recipe that I learned from my grandma, and it's multiple interpretation of like this in the island. Like some people have the tendency of also, instead of fermenting, they use vinegar and mix it almost like pickles. Like some people use it like they do vinegar, but like the way that I learned was like my, like we call it pica de piña because have pineapple. And we use like garlic, clove garlic. We use whole black peppers, ají caballero. There is a specific like type of hot pepper that grow in Puerto Rico. Like I think if you translate the name of it, it's like gentleman pepper.
Yes. very formal.
Yeah. And I put recao. I put...
could also be called culantro.
Yeah, culantro. Sometimes I add ginger. And you can add also the skin of the pineapple. And that will help also in the process of fermentation and add a little bit of sweetness. And at the end, this like fermentation is all this thing kind of like floating. And you can use also oregano too. It's one type of oregano that is like a little leaf that grow in Puerto Rico too. And
we use
that one. And everything is floating inside this bottle. Usually we use a recycled flask of rum or a big bottle. Yeah. and usually you let it ferment and you don't blend it. And it's used almost like because it have this acidity that developed through fermentation, it's used to put on top of rice. Mm. You put it to anything, like anything that you want to add some spice, you add it directly. And it's the aspect, of course, you can look it up, but like...
We want to hear from you, Darich. Yeah. We're here with Darich Perez Reyes, the fermenter in the Hudson Valley. And yeah, this is critical PK information coming to you straight from Catskill.
Yeah. But yeah, like you do that, you put everything inside this bottle and let it ferment. Of course, you don't close this bottle.
Please don't close the bottle.
Yeah, yeah. Everything can explode and became so more dangerous.
Yes, that happened to me the other night.
It happened a lot. And like I recommend don't sealing completely the bottle, leaving it loose and to this CO2 or gases that produce this fermentation have the possibility to go out.
Yes.
But yeah, this is how we made the pique. Like in my family, you usually can find it in the street in Puerto Rico, in the highway. People in the street in the side by the road, they are selling pique. Mm-hmm. Mostly the time, it's no label. It's a clear glass, and you have to know what it is.
Good. This is good. This is good. Uh-huh. Because you'll know when you... I got it. I think when I got it last time, they did have the rum label, but it was cloudy yellow liquid immersed with peppers. And like you said... Uh-huh. And then I said, I have to have that. Yeah.
Completely. Yeah, no. And I think these pique are they are for sale by the side of the road, but they are not like under any like practically it's like so folkloric, like this in the island that like a lot of people make it at home and sell it in the street more than pass through any like reglement or like legit. It's actually with no label. Oh,
There's a reason that it lives in the rum bottle for more than one. No, it's so interesting. I mean, I don't think we ever had it growing up. And I mean, because we would have like, arroz con habichuela, like rice and beans, and with chicken. But I think it's also because the food of Puerto Rico is typically quite rich and
heavy, yeah,
and not super spicy.
No,
and so to have this kind of this one player that can get quite spicy, or how do you? I was looking up different recipes, and like you said, everyone makes it a different way. You can have vinegar, half and half vinegar water.
Exactly.
Just the pineapple skin steamed, and then everyone chooses their aromatics.
Exactly.
Saw a lot of fruits coming into play, which I'm not sure, you know, if you've experimented with that, like guanabana or tamarind.
Like you can add any fruit, and in Puerto Rico, you can find it with many other fruit. Like the more I think popular that I know is like the pique de piña, but even today, like we are so exposed to the challenge of experimenting with different things and
Doritos.
And like you know, you can put any fruit that you want to add to it. Mm-hmm. Of course, like the spiciness is going to be depending of the pepper that you use. In this case, in Puerto Rico, like traditionally is being used caballero peppers, but like you can use any hot pepper and you control how hot can be and depend how many you put, you know, like it's all depending. And also in the more it ferments, like the more spicy it gets.
Okay.
That's yeah. Good. Like typically this go with a lot of liquid for that is not like a full pepper sauce.
Mm.
It's something more like actually it look almost like you are infusioning like this pepper in water or vinegar.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
It's not too much pepper.
Yes, just a few. It's not, exactly. Yeah, the ratio is pretty low in terms of liquid to pepper.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is almost. And some people make it more spicier. Like it depend of how it tastes. Like you are used to tolerate like spicy food.
Yeah, are you able to find ají caballeros here, or
no.
How? So you're mostly using other hot peppers available.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I grew my peppers and I use those to make like pique or hot sauce. I'm mostly the time I'm lacto fermenting. That what it means is like making a brine with salt and letting ferment these peppers and other things together. And after all, I blend it and make like a sauce.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So the microbes, the lactic acid bacteria
exactly.
on the peppers, once they're in a brine of sufficient salinity, they're able to kind of take over. And transform the flavor into a sour, spicy sauce.
Exactly, full of flavor.
Yeah.
And if you have pineapple, sweet.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you could, yeah.
Or whatever fruit you have available, you know. Like.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the experimentation and everyone has a different, you know, or taste sensibilities. And so, I mean, that's what I love. Also about fermentation and just the experimentation of it all and understanding the spectrum of taste that you can achieve with just some peppers and water and salt.
Exactly, yeah.
Wonderful. So we're still here, but we're not nearing the end. But well, maybe we can talk about it. I mean, I wanted to just kind of touch on anyone who's possibly interested in fermentation curious, hasn't fermented, has fermented from any, in your experience, is there anything you'd like to share or general tips or, I mean, we know don't close the container when you're making PK because the lactic acid bacteria will make CO2 and that could cause the explosion. Bottle to explode.
Yeah. And more if it's glass, like it became more dangerous. Sometimes like I feel like through a microphone, some I suggest if you're going to ferment anything, like, I mean, you're going to use a glass jar, just don't close it. Sometimes I recommend using like a recycled plastic bottle because that would expand and inflate and would, it's not too dangerous. Mm-hmm. But like, I think I recommend everybody like do it, like, because get to it. Like, it's many information accessible today for any whatever you are curious to make. I think like something easy to make is like pique, because it's just drop in water, in salt water, whatever ingredient you want to put, and it will ferment. And sometimes the level of salinity that I recommend is like tasted, and if it tastes a little less salty than the water ocean, like sometimes that is my measuring tip.
Oh yeah,
like
and that's a common taste that we all know is what ocean water tastes like.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, not everyone.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Oh, the folks of us who are grateful enough close to be in the presence of the ocean.
Yeah, yeah. Because like many like country have a center, and that is more far away from the ocean. But like something I think that is important, but like that is the taste that I go for it. Like, but some people recommend the 3% of the weight of the ingredient that you add in. Mm-hmm. And I never do that. I like never practice that. I just go by my taste.
Yeah.
If it's too salty at the time that you prepare it, like it's gonna keep the salt. Don't gonna go anywhere.
Yes.
It's not gonna be transforming umami or like.
Yeah.
It's gonna still. It's gonna stay there, and you're gonna taste the salty. And if you know, if it's too salty, just dump a little bit of water out and add more water and try to level it. And, but those are the tip that I think I recommend like anyone to ferment.
Yeah.
I
think it's great. I mean, to start off with the lactic acid fermentation and it has so many possibilities in terms of the possibilities of flavor depending on what you're fermenting in the brine. And even though you're using the same method, it just
can
keep exploring with different vegetables, fruits. I mean, it can go any kind of way. But so we have a couple of minutes left, and I just wanted to thank you so much again for being here with Darich Perez Reyes on WGXC 90.7 FM Acre. So what are you up to now in terms of your fermentation journey before we close out briefly? And I'd like you to share also how folks can find you.
Yeah. Right now I just came from bottling a lot of wine.
Amazing.
I'm working a project with two other friends, and we are making like wine, like natural wine, everything from the Hudson Valley, like from New York. And I'm working on that, and that project is called La Fermentora. And
is that your shirt?
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing.
And also like I do workshop, and I like to post delicious thing in Instagram that I made. I'm not that good at posting a lot, but like
it's wonderful to see. You have so much.
in Instagram you can find me as a Wild Culture Kitchen
with the dashes in between.
Yeah,
and the dashes at the end.
I don't know. Okay.
I think that you just have to tap Kosher Kitchen,
yes,
and it will come out something. And if it's related to fermentation, that is me.
Okay. And it will be pretty straightforward if there's tepache, kombucha.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's clear what's going on that account.
Yeah, I like to experiment with any ferment, and I try to keep, even during the winter, I'm right now in home fermenting sauerkraut.
Yeah, I've been really into making makgeolli and sake, some rice wines. But, well, we are at the end, so thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So wonderful, and until next time.